following audio is a podcast from Leader Breakthrough, an organization committed to coaching and resourcing the personal development of risk-taking kingdom leaders. For more information, visit www.leaderbreakthrough.com.
Well, welcome to the Leader Breakthrough podcast. I'm Terry Walling, and usually I have my sidekick, Patrick Curry, in with me, but today I have a special guest in with us. His name is Dan Nold. Him and I have got ourselves in all sorts of mischief related to ministry and everything else in the last few years. And I'm going to let, before we even talk about the topic, I'm going to let Dan quickly just introduce who he is, how we got connected together, and kind of tell us a little bit of where he is. That'll help set the stage for this edition of the Leader Breakthrough podcast. Go for it, Dan.
Yeah, so it's great to be with you. My name is Dan, and I'm a pastor here at Calvary in State College, Pennsylvania, also known sometimes as Happy Valley and home of
Valley.
Penn State.
Happy Valley.
Now a little bit less happy, but still Happy Valley, home of Penn State University. And I've been the pastor here at Calvary for this May. It'll be 26 years.
26.
Only two churches in my ministry career, and this one and one other. So it's been a great ride here at Calvary. When I came, the church was maybe 300 or so, and one location, one service. And now we're multi-site, meet in five different places, and have 1,400 or 1,500 people who come. And it's been a great ministry, great opportunity to lead. And the way that Terry and I got connected was I've always been interested in, passionate about leadership development and about I don't know. Everything is like 6 or 7 or 8 years ago for me, I think.
Right.
But somewhere in that time frame, I started working on a doctor of ministry in organic leadership development, and Terry was the leader of that cohort at Bethel Seminary, and that was our first connection.
We've
just kind of stayed connected ever since, working on leadership development stuff. So
one of the things, Dan, I love about who you are, and I love even about when we've had a chance to Robin and I be with you at Calvary, is what I recognize really as the genuine expression of people who are not trying to play church but actually trying to be the church. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say that a lot, but I genuinely see that there. I think the thing that first impacted me was your motto or your slogan was you were going to be a church without walls. Yeah. And that passion you've had to actually not just build Calvary, but reach that whole region, Central Valley there, Pennsylvania, has just, and it continues to both humble me and make me roll up my sleeves and say, I got to do everything I can to help this guy. Dan and Lynn are also good friends of Robin and I, so It's been a great relationship, but something has occurred in Dan's life in the last few months that I thought would be really good for us to talk about. He's been kind of on a journey in moving into a deeper place with God, as all of us are in pursuit of God. If we're going to stay in this thing long term, you recognize I've got to go to a new place with God if I'm going to do anything for God. But it's kind of almost culminated in what occurred in the last few weeks of Dan's life. So, Dan, I'm going to let you kind of set this up related to the COVID-19 pandemic that we find ourselves in right now. And why don't you just kind of share what's occurred in the last few weeks of your journey?
Well, the only thing I'll say first is that I'm not sure that it's culminated, because I think there's an awful lot more work
that God has
to do to do in me. But this part of the chapter, defining moment, turning point, happened, kind of started early March. I do some consulting for ministries and churches sometimes, and I was doing a strategic planning deal for a ministry mission group out in the Portland, Oregon area. And one of the guys who was part of that team, he was there the first 2 days, didn't show up the third day because he was sick. The first 2 days, he didn't have any fever. I don't even remember that he had a cough, but you know, wasn't feeling up to par. And so my last time with him would have been sometime on Sunday,
right?
The eighth, I think, was the date of March. And went home, got home on Tuesday, met with a whole bunch of pastors on Wednesday, started talking about all the, you know, Corona stuff. And we were supposed to meet on Thursday, but all the pastors there that night said, hey, we need to go back to our churches and start doing some strategic planning. And so all day Thursday, I met with my staff. We did our first, you know, online kind of stuff that weekend, the 15th, I guess. And that Sunday night was when I first came down with the symptoms.
Wow. And what did you notice like right away occurring? Yeah. Did you just start feeling weak, or what was it?
You know, probably the main thing for me, and everybody just seems to be a little bit different with this, but the main thing for me was a fever, you know, a little bit of a beginning of a cough, and just general aches and pains. You know, I never had the really bad respiratory stuff the whole 2 weeks that I had symptoms, but there's a little bit of it, you know, take a deep breath and you cough kind of thing. But it was mostly fever, the chills, you know, the shakes, the sweats, that kind of stuff, especially at night, and just general fatigue and nauseous, kind of not hungry. That was really the beginning of it. And then I actually had a doctor's appointment already set up for a physical. You know, they've been set up a number of months that week. And so I think it was Wednesday that I probably went in and told them, you know, the symptoms, what I was experiencing. Yeah, yeah. And they, you know, immediately dropped down all their protective gear and went through the physical kind of stuff. And he said, well, we're going to test you first for flu. You know, so they took a swab that was like 14 feet long and stuck it through my nose into my brain.
And
did that twice, one each nostril, one to check for flu and one to check for COVID if the flu was negative.
Which is kind of what I see sometimes when these, you know, film clips run or these news clips run about people getting tested.
It wasn't like painful, but the second one they did definitely brought tears to my eyes.
Wow.
So anyway, I took the test and at the same time he thought I had some diverticulitis, and so he gave me, you know, drugs for that. So I had all kinds of, you know, stuff going on, and so found out first that the flu tested negative, and then on Sunday the 22nd found out that I tested positive for the COVID.
Well, so it took a little while to actually confirm that you actually had it.
Yeah, and I was probably quicker than a lot that I've heard. I mean, once I tested negative for the flu and they put in for the test for COVID, it wasn't more than 4 days before I found out. Right. But I'd had the symptoms then for a week.
Right, right. So you had been with all these pastors. You had been with all your staff.
Yeah.
And now you find out you've come down with the virus.
Yeah. And honestly, that was, you know, probably immediately one of the hardest things is just, you know, having that kind of burden of feeling like, man, I hope I didn't give it to anybody else.
Right.
You know, and as a church, as a staff, you know, and all that kind of stuff from the get-go, we're probably the first church here in town that said, no, we're going to cancel services. So, you know, we're trying to be conscious of that. And then not only my staff, but obviously my wife.
Did the staff and all the people around you, did they have to kind of go into a self-contained quarantine kind of a thing, or how'd that work?
Yeah. Basically everybody who had been with me, had to go on a 14-day quarantine. Now the reality is, you know, I didn't know. I mean, so the Thursday when I met with everybody, I didn't have any symptoms.
Right.
You know, so I know, you know, people are saying you can still be infectious, but I was still 3 or 4 days out from having symptoms.
Gotcha.
But still the doctors said, you know, anybody who has been with you since, you know, that last Sunday, you need to contact. But by the time I knew, you know, they were already by the time I knew that I had COVID-19, they were already 10 or 11 days into that 14-day kind of quarantine time.
Okay.
So they actually, most of them only had to actually quarantine 4 or 5 days. And then if they didn't have any symptoms after that, they were good to go. And you know, providentially, is better than luckily. Nobody that I'm aware of got it from me. So
right.
I'm,
right.
you know, pretty happy about that.
Yeah. So here you are, you're quarantined, and now you start really battling this thing.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is I think a lot of us have believed all these accounts, but really never had this upfront, somebody actually explained this thing to us. So what did you go through physically? What, you know, I know you don't have to share all of it, but what was it like to battle this thing, and what did it do to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody that I talk to say, well, you know, if you don't get hospitalized, they consider it a mild case. And, I've just said it's the sickest mild I've ever
wow.
had.
Wow.
You know, I think a big part of it for me was just the length. I mean, I've never been sick like that for almost 2 weeks. I'm a fairly healthy guy, and that just, you know, it just never happened before. And so that was part of it. But for me, and again, everybody's different. My wife's cousin has it in New York City. She's a nurse, and she got it. And her experience has been different from mine. But for me, right in the middle, like the Sunday that I found out I was positive, and the next day, Monday, and the next day, Tuesday, those were my worst days, with Monday being, you know, Monday all through Sunday night through, you know, Monday night going to sleep was probably the time where Lynn, my wife, would say, I was really kind of concerned that I'd probably have to take you to the hospital.
Right.
I think the thing that, you know, kept that from happening was I still didn't have, you know, the same kind of respiratory problem that a lot of people have. But that Monday and Tuesday, I felt terrible. I had zero energy. I couldn't get out of bed. It's just the worst I felt in a long, long time. Nauseous, you know, I mean, just kind of everything descended. And you know, of course, I think one of the things too is that, and you know, people listen to this, you know, you can relate even if you haven't gotten sick, is the, you just got that thought in the back of your mind. I mean, you've heard so many people say,
right,
one minute I was fine and the next minute I was on a respirator, you know, kind of thing. And so you're always just, I mean, well, I actually
kind of,
asked.
And it's Lena, kind of your case right there where once it finally hit, boom, it seems like it goes kind of fast at that point in time in terms of symptoms starting to really have an impact in life. So
that Monday night, Lynn woke up multiple times just to make sure I was still breathing.
Wow.
So.
Wow. And so you were down. When did it finally lift for you? So you kind of go down on Sunday, Monday. Are you battling it for an entire week, or when did it start?
So my total time of symptoms was just a little bit shy of 2 weeks. I think 13 days.
Right.
I had the symptoms, and that Monday, Tuesday was kind of right smack dab in the middle. So I had symptoms for a week, found out I was positive, and had symptoms for another week but it was that Sunday, Monday in the middle that right. was the worst.
All at home. No, you didn't go to the
all
hospital.
At home.
Yeah. All at home. Yeah.
All at home. And the doctors, I mean, we got lots of calls from, you know, the PA Public Department of Health and CDC and, you know, stuff like that. And the basic, you know, thing they told us was, you are contagious until you've had 3 days in a row of no symptoms. And then once I was past that 3 day, you know, period of no symptoms, then Lynn, because she'd been with me all the time, she had to start a 2 week, 14 day quarantine. And so her 14 days of quarantine will be over the Monday after Easter. So,
and she's had some mild symptoms, correct? Is that?
Yeah. In the middle, the last 3 days, she hasn't really had any. The last couple of days have been really good, but in the middle, more mild probably than mine. I mean, we're just kind of assuming. One doctor said, just assume that you have it because it's so contagious that with the two of you living in the same space, you know, for that long,
right?
It'd be hard to believe that you wouldn't have. But for her, the symptoms were more aches and pains, headaches, a little bit more of a cough than me,
right.
but not still not terrible. And some fever, but you know, now, like I said, the last 3 days, no right. fever. And,
right.
But we're both, you know, gaining strength and getting yeah. better day by day.
So obvious to this story is this isn't a case like, you know, some of the real severe right. cases that have taken people to the hospital and even right. put people on ventilators and yeah. even caused, you know, the loss of life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do think it's interesting. You've got to have had some of those thoughts cruising around in your mind and in you as you just kind of laid there. How yeah. was that process of just knowing you have this, hearing yeah. all the other reports? I mean, did you just turn the TV off because you didn't want to hear it? Or, yeah. or, you know, how was that almost psychological part of this thing as well as the physical?
Yeah. Well, I think some of that hit Lynn even as much, if not more, than it did me. We yeah. had started, one of the first things that we initiated when all of this went down was a week of 24/7 prayer, you know, just obviously pray in place, you know, while right. you're sheltering in place. And so Lynn grabbed the hour of midnight to 1 a.m. and you've been in our cabin. You kind of know, yep. you know, the view out looking over the valley, and she'd just go out on the porch, you know, from 12 to 1 and pray. And she said that there would be times where, you know, the panic would just kind of rise up in her throat, and she'd just stop and pray and just really felt God breathe peace into mm-hmm. her. And I, you know, yeah, I felt some of that. I don't think I felt it to a huge extent. I think it was just like this constant, you know, a little bit of heaviness with you all the time, like the uncertainty of just not what does tomorrow hold? Not really a fear, but just kind of more that uncertainty.
Yeah.
I don't know what's yeah. coming. And then of course, you know, just feeling the burden for me, that was a major part of it. Just feeling the burden, like I need to lead.
Right.
You know, my people, my staff, and you know, not only am I feeling sick, but you have that kind of uncertainty. I mean, all of that,
yep.
you know, all of that played yep. together.
So your good friend, of which I'm talking about myself now, your good friend hears that Dan feels like he should preach.
Yeah.
Your good friend is texting you with, "Are you kidding me?" Because I know Dan's a loyal soldier, and I know Dan basically to be somebody sometimes who has had the propensity to take care of everyone else, maybe not as much himself. So here I was saying to you, Dan, stay down. But you had a different feeling inside of you that even yeah. surpassed the duty and obligation. What was going on inside of you that led you to actually get up and tape your message that would go to your people that next Sunday, right in the middle of all this? What was happening yeah. inside of you?
Yeah. I don't know, a lot, you know, I think, so I you know, to kind of play off what you said, I guess you could say that really all three Sundays that we've had online.
Right.
You know, I was less than healthy. The first one was probably the one that I felt the best because we record on Saturdays, but then the last two,
right.
You know, felt less than optimal.
Right.
Before we headed into this, I mean, I knew, you know, there was stuff going on in the world with the coronavirus, but,
right.
but before any of the stuff came down here, I had decided that, leading into Easter, our whole year this year has been on breakthrough and focusing on prayer as a form of breakthrough, and then focusing on the word as a form of breakthrough. And I thought mm-hmm. I was done with that and was going to go into something different leading into Easter, and just felt like, no, we need to stick with breakthrough. And I felt like God led me to John 14 through 17, kind of that, you know, halftime talk before Jesus goes to the cross.
Right.
And I mean, there's so much good stuff in those passages, but I don't know. I felt like God had given me the message that people needed to hear from those you know, that three chapter conversation that Jesus had with his disciples and the one chapter conversation that he had with his father. And I just, I felt like, I mean, if I just couldn't do it, and I asked Len, you know, is it okay if I preach this weekend, or do you think that's really stupid? But I just felt like, especially those two weekends, Palm Sunday and the weekend before, that the message that God had kind of planted in my heart was what needed to go out. So I you know, I went for it. I felt like God gave me grace in the midst of sometimes not feeling great to,
right,
you know, pull stuff together. But even more than that, you know, it was just, I think God used it, you know, I mean.
Well, it was, there was no doubt. I'm interrupting, but there was no doubt once you started sharing, because I listened to them both. Once you started sharing, there was no doubt that God had superintended and given you both something to say and an authority to say it that was pretty incredible to watch and to actually be a part of. And it wasn't because I knew you were sick. It was because, you know, like some people have said or used the word, it was because what was coming out of your mouth wasn't you. It was, in some sense, even if we didn't understand all the words, it was something like spiritual authority. It was a sense of God's presence on your life. And this is really dangerous for me to do, but what... Because to give the mic to a preacher, forget it. But what was the message, Dan? I mean, what in a nutshell, what is it that you felt like he wanted you to say, or the people, we as a people, needed to hear? Both in that first one and that second one, and not long, just summarize it for us.
Well, I think, I mean, the overarching theme, I think, that God has been planting deep in my heart for 5 or 6 years now, I was going back and looking, is that theme of expectancy, you know, that we need to have our eyes open because God is doing some stuff right now. And I feel like if I have a clue on 3 or 4 really good things that he's doing, there's 10,000 really great things that I have no clue about. But to just have that attitude of hope and expectancy. Hope has been even more so than faith and love. You know, hope has been the theme that God has had me on. So all of them were in the context of hope. I mean, it's Jesus saying, trouble's coming. You don't have to let it into your heart. It's going to be hard, but there's hope. And that's kind of what I just kept gleaning out of those chapters. And then I think the two things, kind of two moments where I felt like I had a moment with God that he wanted me to share with others. I mean, the first one was that Sunday night when I found out that I was positive, and I went to bed, and, you know, I'm honestly just a bit discouraged. I mean, trying to lead into something that, you know, we never talked about in seminary. And you know, at the same time, I'm talking to pastors of large churches across the state of Pennsylvania, and honestly, I kind of feel like they're leading in stride and hit it out of the park, and I'm sick and I'm uncertain about what I can do in the days to come. And honestly, I felt inadequate at best. And I was just laying there praying, and I really felt like, you know, God kind of did one of these, let me tell you what's going on kind of things, and just said, Dan, your problem is you're still trying to control everything that you can control. And you're so focused on what you think is dependent upon your leadership. And I just had this sense of him saying, what you've been longing for, what you've been praying for, I'm doing. You just need to let go. And so, you know, all of us as leaders, I mean, that's a constant ongoing kind of battle. Is my leadership going to primarily be about what I can control and the capacities that I bring to it? Or is it going to be that always surrender and the best thing I can bring is not my capacities, but my broken, desperate, you know, dependency upon God. And so that was the first thing. And you know, that was, I think, the last few weeks, part of the message, or at least the underlying vibe of of what I keep feeling like God is bringing. And then the second thing, you know, kind of moment that I had with God was just, you know, I mean, through your coaching, through Paul's spiritual direction, through kind of this journey of figuring out what spiritual authority is all about. I, one of the things I've learned is to, you know, kind of follow the tears. I don't have a long history of being a real emotional guy, but the last few years, you know, man, the tears just come sometimes in the strangest of places. And the last couple of weeks it has been like that in spades for me. Mm. You know, I mean, there'll be times I go to bed and I'm laying there and I just start to pray. And all of a sudden I'm doing my best to not make a sound, but I can't keep the bed from shaking because the sobs are kind of racking inside.
Right.
And so at some point I kept going to God, say, where is this emotion coming from? Cause I didn't feel like I was fearful. You know, I mean, there was some obviously lamenting what was going on in other people's lives, but I also have this feeling like there's been a lot of lamentable things for decades. And at some point I just had one of those moments of feeling like God was saying, you know, it's not your emotion that you're feeling, it's mine.
Wow. Wow.
And just a sense that he was saying, I just want to give you a little bit of a taste of my heart for my kids, for the world. And I've just had this picture of, you know, God putting us on a worldwide Sabbath and just trying to clear out the distractions and the noise and the voices. And I just have this picture of, you know, the father holding his arms open wide and whispering, child, come home. You know, it's yep. time. And so, yep. you know, I think both of those themes in different ways, you know, over the course of the last few weeks have been what God wanted me to put out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge, bud. And, you know, I think what he's doing, in and through what we're all experiencing.
Yeah.
As I talk to leaders in all different places, in all different locations, all the way from China to, you know, here where I live in Chico, California, this is a game changer. There's things that are happening, and he's at work moving in ways that so many people for so many years have prayed for and travailed, if I can use that word, in prayer, wanting to see happen. Well, something's happening. And in the midst of all of this pain and all of this hurt, something is occurring. Aslan's on the move. And I think all of us in this period of time is now almost that same thing, that surrender, that actually releasing and allowing him to take us to a new place. It's almost, I see it almost like an emptying of the backpack and him putting in now some new things into the backpack as you can't take everything with you as we move into the next chapter of our journey. Well, I'm going to pause us there. Go for it. No, it's fine.
To use something that you teach so well on, I think part of it for me is just having this vision, and that's part of, I think, the worldwide Sabbath, but this vision of God's kind of taking the whole world through a transition, you know, and we don't know what the future holds. We know what it used to be.
Right.
We're eager to get out of it. But you know, in your words, God wants to get into it. And the whole thing about transitions is just the uncertainty. I mean, how many times have we said those words? Everything feels uncertainty and everything is so fluid. You can't plan for tomorrow because tomorrow might, you know, be different than today. And I just think, you know, worldwide, there's that sense, not even just of tragedy. I mean, we haven't hit like so much tragedy more than before, but this sense of uncertainty, I think is God putting us all of us into a transition.
Which is classic to transition.
Yeah.
I can't go back. We don't know which way forward, the uncertain future, the leaning in versus leaning away.
Yeah.
The getting all we can out of it is so counterintuitive, but so, in some sense, of what the Spirit's at work doing. It's us. Exactly. It's almost us being John, leaning into Jesus. It's how bad do we want to know what he's at work doing, because he is at work doing. I'm glad we got that in there, especially that groundbreaking idea of transitions. I don't know. Yeah. Somebody ought to write a book on that, but
maybe they could call it Stuck.
Oh, dude, don't go too far. Nobody will buy that title. Anyways, hey, we're going to take a break and pause this. Because Dan and I want to talk a little bit about this concept of how God actually builds into our lives spiritual authority. And yeah, what is it that he uses? And so we're going to pick up part two of the discussion. And I invite you to both join us and maybe even link these podcasts to other people that might benefit just hearing about the journey of not just experiencing this disease, but also understanding potentially how God is using it to shape each of our lives. So come on back to part two. But this is Terry Walling, Leader Breakthrough. Great to have you today. And if you can, join us for part two as we talk about more of the lessons related to the time that we're going through right now.
For more information, visit www.leaderbreakthrough.com.